Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. Welcome up, Beth. Sorry. Hey, traveling partners, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
Tom McGregor.
And this is actually the second part of an interview, a story time.
It's a little story fire time. Chat.
It's a second part of a sharing of a testimony from
Suzanne Hagelin.
Suzanne Hagelin is with us once again. We did something like this last year, for most of last year, where we shared people's stories and we called it "Word of Their Testimony." Tom McGregor, where is that from?
It's from Revelation 12:11.
Yeah,
12:11.
You nailed it.
Yeah. I always do 11:12 or 12:13 because I know they're
right in order.
Anyway,
yeah.
Jesus calls his people to be overcomers, and then halfway through the book, he defines how that happens by saying, "The word of their testimony, their Jesus story, the blood of the Lamb, trusting in His sacrifice and finished work, and then not being afraid to die, because that often is the consequence, either." Metaphorically, or really, historically, that's been the consequence.
Yeah. Yeah. Last week, we spent some time hearing from Suzanne, from part of her story. And Suzanne, you can cut me off anytime you want to or correct anything of the recap that I'm about to give, if you would like to.
Oh, of the recap. I was going to say, is that a standing offer from now on?
Yeah. From now on, you can cut me off
whenever
you want. Yes. That's just fine.
Thank you.
Suzanne shared with us about, you know, she was born in the U.S., but spent a lot of her childhood and formative years in Mexico, and immediately was hit with tragedy. And as a result, there was just some hard things that followed when it came to, you know, family relationships and security, and feeling just sort of out of place in most places where you were, whether that was in friend groups or in academia or whatever. You just never really felt accepted or included in the way that you would like. Is that a good summation?
It's a good summation, but I didn't leave a good picture of Mexico because I was telling my salvation story. It's like, here's the dark shadow that I was walking through.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just briefly touch on the way the Lord blessed me in Mexico, in spite of the tragedy, in spite of the, you know, many episodes of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
He really was kind to me in many ways, and he gave me such a rich an opportunity to grow as a person, and just learning, becoming a part of a different culture and learning a different language. And there were many times that were happy times in the midst of the hard things.
Hmm.
I really developed some really good friendships. I learned a lot of skills. I really loved how my life grew there.
Hmm.
I just was very lost, and there was always that part of me that didn't belong. But one of the things I loved about being in Mexico was the way families work.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of like these sections where you just hang out with people your own age.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also there wasn't, at least in my school, among my friends, we weren't dating. We did everything in groups, and we did stuff all the time. We went places, we went to parties, we went, you know, to restaurants and staying up really late. And often we'd be at people's houses and their parents would be there and they were friends of ours. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it didn't feel like it was here when I would come up to the States and there's all this isolation between
siloing
ages
off
and it was, you know, it was the 70s. It was the hippies era and people were really hostile to older people. And it was just really foreign to my experience. So I value that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't all bad, but I know you're telling
yes.
stuff. Some big formative things happened that
yes.
weren't great as well.
Yeah.
So shortly after that, we spent a lot of time there, and then we transitioned into your time here in the States. You came up here mm-hmm. to the UW, and you met someone, and through that person, through this woman, you met Jesus. And that's kind of where we had to stop. You know, there was a lot to talk about. We asked a lot of questions. You had a lot to share. But we also had to kind of put a T on things. And this week we don't have a Tom Regan, but we do have another Tom that we're grateful to share the mic with.
All work.
Tom McGregor is more than a stand-in. Tom McGregor is awesome. But we wanted to spend some more time, again, because we just kind of just landed on your salvation story. And I know that that there's been a lot that's happened since then.
Yes.
And I'm not calling you old. No, I'm not doing that.
That's
but
okay.
There's been a lot that's happened since then, and your life has been a testimony to God's faithfulness since then.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so let's kind of get back where we were.
Yep.
You have had this encounter with God where you know him as his son. Jesus is more than five letters to you now,
that's
is the way
right.
you put it. Jesus was five letters.
Mm-hmm.
But now Jesus is more than five letters to you.
Mm-hmm.
What happens next?
He's a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like wandering outside,
mm-hmm.
if you want to think of life and the community of God,
okay.
as a walled city.
Mm-hmm.
I was like in the dark, wandering outside, looking for a door or looking for something. And my whole lack of identity and belonging as far as culture or people group goes
yeah.
was connected to that.
Yeah. You just sort of felt like an outsider for the
most
part.
Even when I wasn't an outsider, yeah. there was always part of me that was
yeah.
just in the darkness,
mm-hmm.
like imprisoned. But there was a place inside in the city of God with my name on it. There was
mm-hmm.
a place for me. And my heart longed for that, and I could not be at rest apart from that. So my experience of salvation, it may have been... There may have been a lot of me searching, but honestly, it's he found me. I couldn't possibly have found him
mm-hmm.
myself. And I just want to touch on a couple of verses about belonging.
Mm-hmm. One thing you learned about Suzanne is that if you spend 10 minutes with her, you'll get 40 scriptures, and it's all helpful. So anyway.
Thank you.
Some of them are in Hebrew, too. So
I won't do that,
okay,
I don't think.
Thank you.
I mean, maybe extemporaneously, okay. but... Romans 7:4 says that you belong to him who was raised from the dead. That's where my life in Christ started, that I belong to him. If anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to him. That's Romans 8:8. But he had given me his Spirit. I was sealed with his Spirit. If we live, we live for the Lord. And if we die for the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong
mm-hmm.
to the Lord. That's Romans 14:8. In 1 Corinthians 3:23, it says, you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. In Galatians 3:29 and Galatians 5:24, it speaks of belonging to Christ as heirs of the promise. It speaks of how that impacts our behavior, and we put to death the deeds of the flesh. Belonging to the household of faith, that's Galatians 6:10. We care for one another because we belong. 1 Thessalonians 5:8 talks about belonging to the day, which has to do with our behavior. And 1 John 3:19 talks about belonging to the truth
mm.
and how that strengthens our hearts. And I just have to say that I can look at that now and say, oh, yes, I see how this was at work.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I was simply existing and benefiting from this sense of...
So these weren't like passages that at the time they meant something to you. It's just in retrospect, you look back and see how these things were true.
Yes, because I was lost and then mm-hmm. I was a part of his...
Mm-hmm.
Of him.
How did that happen?
Well.
I mean, not the story prior
right.
to, but how did these things start getting worked out in your life?
Yeah, what did belonging mean at that point?
Well, I started to make friends because once I had Jesus, I had something in common with people
mm-hmm.
who also knew him. I moved out of the place where I was living with roommates who were not Christians, and I moved in with the gal that had prayed with me, and then we collected. I had a number of roommates that I cycled through, and we were all kind of in the same position of either new believers or young adults who were returning to their faith.
Mm.
And we just inspired each other. So I immediately began to have a place to live,
yeah.
a community, and we did a lot of fun things together. We studied the Word of God together. And that, like one of my roommates, every morning she'd get up and study the Bible before
mm-hmm.
she went to work. And I saw that and I thought, I want that. So I just...
That's awesome.
That was just something I took on. which, by the way, when you have small children is really hard to do. So at that point it became, I will make reading the Bible the first thing I do, even if it's late at night. As far as reading.
You're in community housing at this point, but you're married and have kids?
Oh, no, she's just...
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, you're
single woman. I was just saying, as far as reading the Bible every day, I did that up until I had children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At which point I had to adjust
your expectations,
the idea of the morning and how much I could do. And just decided,
So very practically, you go from, again, feeling like a third culture, kind of like a third culture person, to finding inclusion and community in that way. So like belonging shows up in that way. Mm-hmm. What did, that's a lot of practical things that happen. What happened to, your conception of yourself and, you know, again, you're looking back in retrospect saying, I belong, and being able to trace that through scripture. Was that something you were very aware of, or is it just something you felt and identified later?
No, I was aware of it.
Okay.
And I was very much, if I can say this, in love with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I felt
shallow.
I felt shallow. I would write these poems to him and I'd write songs to him. And I would think to myself, I know it sounds shallow, Lord, because I'm kind of new and I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what it means to love you, but I really feel all this love. I mean, it was kind of mushy.
That's awesome. But,
because of that, because he took me in and it was such a deep, transformative experience.
What happened to your relationships with your former roommates and other people that you were in relationship with prior to meeting Jesus?
Well, my boyfriend ended up breaking up with me. We, for a while, it was like any time I saw him, which was almost every evening, he would be yelling at me and I would be weeping because he was just trying to, he just couldn't believe that I had this conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And
did he see it as a bad thing?
He saw it as nonsense.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, he would just be yelling at me at how stupid I was and how he kept calling out all these things that he thought was wrong with what, I don't know, I don't even know what he said because I didn't know anything. I didn't know the word. Right. I didn't know how to answer.
Yeah. Like, all I know is what I've experienced.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he'd just say, how can you believe in something like that? And I'd say, I just do. And he'd like, how can you know, this is so stupid. And I'd say,
All I know is that I was blind and now I see.
I know. Yeah. I was like... So, but you know, it's one of the things that made me long to study the word and understand so that I could answer questions.
Who was alongside you in that as far as like studying the word? Did you instantly become part of a church? Was it just the community you were part of? Or
I did join a church.
Okay. That's
right
probably
away,
good. Yeah.
Like within a few weeks. And
how did you know to do that?
Because Lorraine was going to a church mm-hmm. and she had just moved here from New York. She was from Brooklyn and she was a very new Christian. And we ended up living together like a couple weeks after I gave my life to Christ, which was good for both of us at the time. And so we just started going to Calvary Fellowship. And they had, you know, Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night, Friday night.
Oh, so it was like as much church as you wanted. It was just
well, and I right and there. We added on. We found out that there were a couple of guys that were going downtown to share the faith with street kids and stuff on Friday and Saturday nights. So there I was, you know, mm-hmm. just every Friday and Saturday night till late, you know. The wee hours of the morning.
This is an aside, but it's amazing to me when I read church history, and especially recent history, where it's like, oh, I actually have a lot in common with them. So like the Jesus movement, it wasn't like less church. It was that this new community becomes the organizing principle in your life, mm-hmm. and the doors are always open, and they just can't get enough of one another.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was at, and yeah, I just loved it, and everything about it was so encouraging. So I'm learning all these different things, studying the word, because they teach through the Bible like we do at Imprint. Mm-hmm. And then on Wednesday nights, they had certain classes, but they had these lengthy prayer meetings, which were really cool on Sunday evenings. And then Friday nights, it was kind of like practicum. There'd be like five or six classes going, and you could choose some. And mm-hmm. it was hard to miss. And sometimes we'd say, okay, you take this one, I'll take that
one.
And
then we'll compare notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. It was rich. It was very rich.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was blessed, very blessed to have that. And so I'd be studying the Bible on my own. I'd have all these questions. And as soon as I could get to one of those events and grab one of the pastors, you know, I'd be like, okay, tell me about this, you know, and they loved it. You know, they always shared their insight. Well, there was one time, this is so cool. I had this question which I remember. I can tell you what it was. I was reading in Numbers 20 or 20 to 22, you know, about Balaam and the donkey. And I was thinking, okay, he asked God if he could go, and God said, go ahead and go. And then he sent an angel to kill him. Why did he do that? So
it's a great question. Yeah.
I know, right? Yeah. And I couldn't find out fast enough my answer. I was really frustrated at not being able to get an answer on that, and not having, it was like 2 or 3 days before I even had, there was something I could go to and grab a pastor. There were no texts and emails in those days, you know. So I finally, in frustration, I just said, Lord, can you help me with this? Can you give me some insight? You know, it's like, is this a thing? And then I felt like, well, all right, I can wait. So the next morning or whatever, I'm getting ready for work or something, and bing, all of a sudden it hits me. It was like the Spirit of God just said, here you go. And it was that God knew Balaam's heart. He knew what he was going to do. So he was responding to what was coming. That's what he gave me. So I may not be saying that very well, but at the time it felt very...
like a direct revelation.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And that's when I discovered the joy of studying the Word. It's like, okay, what I was doing before was, you know, trying to get the lay of the land and picking up information. Mm-hmm. This was on a whole different level. So very exciting.
That's awesome. So you find yourself like in love with the Bible pretty quickly then.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Where did, because I know you are fluent in, I know you probably wouldn't say you're fluent, people who are fluent generally don't, you're fluent in Spanish and in obviously English, I think mostly, but also you're functionally fluent in Hebrew as well. Did that come as a result of you wanting to be able to read the Bible more, or was that curiosity, or was that following Jack, or what was that?
That was my love of languages, my love of cultures.
Okay.
So I wasn't anchored like, here is my home, the United States, although here is my home. Mm-hmm. I was very much like, you know, anywhere in the world, I'll figure things out. I will find my place. Because once I had my identity in Christ, that's like if you're in a shallow river with a strong toe, you know, but you find bedrock and you plant your feet and you stand. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can stand here or I can stand
over there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not afraid of it. Now, I know what it costs to transfer cultures. In fact, the hardest transition, I've done it 4 times, if you don't count becoming a Christian. The hardest one was when I came back to the United States at the age of 20. Mm-hmm. That was by far the worst culture shock I ever went through. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't think it would be hard. I was not prepared.
You're like, I'm an American.
It's like, yeah, I belong here. Oops. Wait, what? Anyway, so Israel, one of my roommates had always wanted to go to Israel. She was a new Christian too. Mm-hmm. And so she said, oh, there's a couple of guys who speak Hebrew at church and they want to start studying. Well, speak Hebrew for them meant like, you know, we can say at least 5 sentences. And they both had been there before. Mm-hmm. Jack was actually in high school there, junior and senior years, but he was in an international school, which was taught in English. Mm-hmm. So he took Hebrew classes, but it
wasn't immersion
like,
or anything. Yeah.
No. And his friends were, you know, international students as well. But, you know, he'd been there 2 years. He wanted to go back. And then his friend Ralph had been there, I don't know, 6 months or something. I can't remember what his reason was. So they met each other and said, let's study Hebrew together. And they decided to meet at our house. And I said, well, I want to be a part of that. And they said, but you don't want to go to Israel. And I said, no, but I'd love to learn a new language. So here we are, meeting once a week. Jack was supposedly the teacher. We called him the teacher, but that's because he had this language program stuff that he'd invested in. Mm-hmm. And he could read a little bit, and he knew, compared to us, you know, he was
anymore
PhD in our minds. We didn't know. So yeah, he taught us the beginning stuff, which was really fun. And you know, it might have been a month of classes, something like that, when he started proposing to me in Hebrew. Because he had a friend who was Israeli at work. And so this Israeli friend, he would talk to him. They'd play backgammon at lunch. And mm-hmm. he'd ask him, so how do you say, will you marry me in Hebrew? He's like, wait, who's the girl? So he had this whole thing going on. And he kept asking him, did you ask her yet? And they'd say, well, not yet. And finally, he started asking me. And he wouldn't tell me what it meant. And oddly enough, I could tell something was going on. But, you know, this is...
That's awesome. Yeah. Were you still in school at this point? Had you graduated?
I had gotten my training in mm-hmm. computer programmer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As programmer analyst, mm-hmm. I did at IBM. Mm-hmm. So I was certified in that.
Okay.
And I was doing computer sciences in Mexico, and then I switched to the computer science department here. Mm-hmm. However, when I became a Christian, you asked, how did it change? One of the things that happened was I went to this one class. It was about faith. It was about taking steps of faith. And I felt challenged. And being a person that wants to respond to a challenge, mm-hmm. I just thought, okay, what is the thing that I have the biggest handle on? Mm-hmm. And that was my plan mm-hmm. for the future. Mm. My degree, my profession. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't have any room here for God to do anything. Wow. If I hold on to this.
Yeah.
So I tore it up. I had this registration thing for the next quarter uh-huh. and I literally in the class, I tore it up. And then I thought, I can always go back in person. You know, it's like the fear thing.
Yeah.
But what I was really doing, it was symbolic, but I was just saying, okay, Lord, putting this on the altar. So you can take it if you want to. And mm-hmm. I didn't really think that he would. But he did.
How do you go about doing that?
My life was so full. I was still working. Mm-hmm. So I didn't lose my job over that. This degree that I was pursuing in addition to the certification I didn't end up getting. But my life was very full. And I just kept thinking, at first I was thinking, well, you know, down the road past this season, I can go back. Or, you know, as soon as he leads me, as soon as he opens mm-hmm. that door. But mm-hmm. he kept opening other doors. Mm. Like getting married, like, you know, we'd been married 3 months and Jack called me at work and he said, do you want to go to Israel? And he said, I just got a job offer for a contract work. And I said, let's do it.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Right? And we went a couple of months later, we were in Israel. So all happened pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Like, I kept laying things on the altar and the Lord kept taking them.
What kind of span was it from when you prayed with Lorraine to that happening? Like, how long are we talking? Is it
till Israel?
Yeah, is it months, weeks, months, years? What is it? Yeah.
So, June of 1981 is the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
During the next few months is when I ended up breaking up with my boyfriend. Then, a few months after that, meeting Jack. And mm-hmm. then... we did Hebrew class for about 4 months before, maybe 5 months.
Yeah, before you could understand.
Before we
will
got
you marry
engaged.
Me? Yeah.
No, when he first proposed to me in English.
In English. Okay, got it.
I refused. But a couple months later, I changed my mind. So
okay. Yeah, we won't tell anyone.
So that's a little over a year to August. We won't tell anyone. Yeah. No. No record of it.
I was going to let
there.
That go.
Okay.
Anyway.
So that's a little over a year, August. And then next year in May, we're married. In maybe it was August again when he made the phone call, and then in October he left, or maybe September he left, and I had to pack up everything and go later. Mm-hmm. So I was there in November.
That's amazing.
Like that.
Yeah.
So a year and a half.
Pretty quick, yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you took the step of faith of saying, like, Lord, my plans are in your hands, and then in a span of 18 months to 2 years or so, you're like, wow, this is very different. I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what did the Lord do in you and in your marriage and all that? What did the Lord do in your faith? One, I guess, just from saying yes to these things, but just in general and from being in Israel, what do you look back on there?
When I went to Israel, I didn't expect to be. I knew a lot of people that thought, oh, the Holy Land and to walk where Jesus walked, and mm-hmm. and I'd be thinking, yeah, that was 2,000 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I wasn't expecting anything like that. I just thought, I'm going to just experience this new place. And I loved Israel. Mm. I loved living there. I loved the people. I went into Hebrew class almost immediately because I had never in my life been without something to do. I was always super involved in a million things. I mean, when I was working full time, I was doing school in the evening and then going out on the weekends. And I mean, just, and then with church, you know,
yeah,
all that stuff. Very, very busy. And suddenly I was in Israel twiddling my thumbs thinking, I can't handle this. I
got to do something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I couldn't work. I didn't have the
visa.
Visa. Mm-hmm. So I went to Ulpan, which is an intensive class. It's 5 hours a day of class, 3 or 4 hours a day of homework. And that's 6 hours. I mean, 6 days a week.
That's amazing.
And
wow.
I did 12 months of that.
Yeah.
So I got really, really good training. Not only in Hebrew, but in how to learn a foreign language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I picked up skills there that I can use to approach any language.
Yeah.
Which has been lovely.
That's amazing.
And the structure of Hebrew is so beautiful. Mm. I really love the language.
What did the ability to read Hebrew and to again, be immersed that quickly and work that rigorously, what did that do to your reading of the Bible? What was it like to be able to read the Old Testament in Hebrew? What was that like?
The Old Testament Hebrew was a little different.
Yeah.
You know, if you think Shakespearean English. Or even, you know, 1800s in the U.S., mm-hmm. which there's some odd ways of language there,
mm-hmm.
To present day, well, of course, nowadays people would say, or, you know, your generation when you were young, the difference to now. You know, it's still English, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Hebrew was still Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. But it was different.
But it was more elevated structure sometimes. I was learning all the layers.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the end that they started to really incorporate some of that poetic style and stuff.
Mm.
But I could understand it, and especially with references. I loved it. I would go and try to read it all the time. And, you know, sometimes try to memorize some stuff. What do I want to say about this? I would write songs in Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
just taken from the scriptures. But I would say that studying the Bible with the Hebrew has been what has kept my grasp of Hebrew until today.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I feel like I'm more fluent in reading it now than I was then, even though I'm so rusty in what I learned.
Yeah.
But there's a value to knowing a language as a living language, as a means of communication, as a form of expression, human expression, emotional, spiritual, just all these different levels where you're absorbing ideas in this language. It's so much different than just looking at it as something to decode.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that I really benefited from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else did you ask me?
No, I just asked. What did it do to? Because at this point, you're still fairly new Christian. I mean, you've only been a Christian for a few years.
Year and a half.
Yeah. What did it do? What did it do to your relationship with God's Word to be able to read it in its original language?
Yeah, like I say, it's just really beautiful. It was a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
The Bible was so much bigger.
McGregor's just smiling so big right now. He has been for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Yeah. I know. I actually got to this place where I was so disillusioned as far as what I personally could do.
Hmm.
I felt like the Bible was so vast, and I didn't want just to know information. I wanted to see all the patterns and all the threads.
Oh,
so
man.
If a pastor was saying, oh, you know, this is only a few of the scriptures that Jesus fulfilled in his lifetime. The Gospels, well, you know, they mention some, but there's hundreds. And I'm thinking, where are they? What are they? And how do I find them? And I literally have spent to this day where I'm still looking for mm-hmm. those things, by the mm-hmm. way. But there were so many... so much about the word that I couldn't retain. And I was always, go ahead.
To clarify, you're still looking to this day and finding them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, not like there's
not
a
just
few.
Like, where are they? I don't know where they are.
No,
yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great clarification.
Wow, I'd hate to leave the wrong impression. Yes, no, I just, it's easier for me now to recognize them and to trust what I'm seeing because the word is familiar to me now, but it took decades to develop that.
Yeah. That's amazing. How long were you guys in Israel?
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Mm. Katie was born there.
Okay.
Her birth was a crisis pregnancy. I apparently clinically died at the time, though I did not have an amazing spiritual experience to tell you guys.
Ah, man. You could have written a book.
I could have. Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, might have to cut that out.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so Katie's born there.
Sorry. Katie was born there. It was a very traumatic birth. She was premature, mm-hmm. and they took her to save my life. I had severe preeclampsia, mm-hmm. which I didn't know what it was at the time. And she was in an incubator for 7 weeks and then in what they call a warm bed for 2 weeks. So mm-hmm. she was 9 weeks in the hospital and she survived.
Man.
And there's a lot, you know, Katie's story is a pretty cool story. Actually, you know how life is. There's all these things that I'm not telling that are really cool stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Rabbit holes.
Yeah.
Rabbit trails.
Yeah. But see, part of what Israel was, it was kind of a trial by fire.
Yeah.
Partly because, you know, Jack had been before, I mean, this is kind of telling his story, but he had been, when he was in college, which is when he came to Christ, he ended up getting involved with this college, quote unquote, Christian group that ended up being kind of like a cult.
Oh.
And I won't tell his story except that as newlyweds in Israel, all of this stuff started coming to the surface. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he was really upset and trying to deprogram.
Yeah.
And here I am again in the position where someone is yelling at me like, you know, how can people say this? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, like arguing all these things that first he would argue what they had taught as if he was trying to convince me. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, no, that's not right. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, you know. But then he would argue as if I had said it mm-hmm. and he was trying to talk me out of it.
Yeah.
And so this was like...
It's like detoxing. Yeah.
It was a super hard thing to detox.
Yeah, that's tough being a newlywed anyway. Yeah. But also in a new place and kind of deprogramming from bad theology.
Yes. Yeah, and it was a dark time for him. I mean, he... Like one time when we were there, he was saying... Because we'd be having this great time. You know, we were newlyweds. We were in love with each other. We enjoyed each other's company. And then I might say something like, oh, can we pray? And then he'd just turn white as a sheet, like a ghost. And he'd fall back in his chair and he'd just be like, oh, he couldn't talk, couldn't breathe. Mm-hmm. And I'd be thinking, what is wrong with you? And what did I say? And finally, he'd have to go to bed.
Sounds like a trauma response.
Exactly. So, yeah, we talked about this recently and we were like, what was that? I don't know.
Yeah.
But he said, I feel like I'm in a tomb. And when I pray, it's like my prayers are just bouncing off the roof. They're not getting through. So in that process, that's where I actually began to acquire more of another one of my loves, which is a love of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a specific person that he was angry with, who oversaw that quote unquote ministry. And I became so angry with him as my husband's yelling at me.
Yeah. And hurt for the one hurt.
Yeah. I didn't take it personally because I knew it wasn't about me, although it was really hard to bear, frankly. But I found myself hating this guy and thinking, this is not from God. This is not okay. And so the only thing I could think of to do was to pray for him. And so at night when I'd be falling asleep, I'd be praying, Lord, please just help him to get out of that cult. Help him to get out. And I found out like 20 years later, because he and Jack somehow connected. And he contacted Jack. I think Jack emailed him and he contacted him and said, can we talk? Got on the phone and started saying, I want to apologize to you.
Oh, man. Yeah.
He said, I have been looking all over the country for everyone that was under my leadership at that point.
Was this the...
Ask for forgiveness. The cult leader guy.
Was this the shepherding movement?
No, it was a Church of Christ related thing.
Oh, okay.
But it was a campus ministry, and I can't remember what the specific nomenclature was.
Yeah.
But he apparently had risen really high in the ranks as mm-hmm. far as that goes, you know, almost like second in command kind of thing, right about the time when I was praying.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And during, it took him about a year, and he was able to get out slowly, get out of this movement and identify, like he began to recognize things that were wrong with the teaching mm-hmm. and things that were upsetting to him, and he started trying to get out of it. And this was literally at the same time when I was every night falling asleep saying, Lord, please help this guy to mm-hmm. get out.
That's mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I didn't know that at the time, but it was the only way I could handle mm-hmm. The stress of, you know, and not wanting to hate someone. I mean, I don't hate him, but just not knowing how to handle that any other way. Emotions come up.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Israel was a bit of a trial by fire, even though we loved it there and we had good friends there and we yeah. had, you know, our oldest daughter born there and I nearly died there. But yeah. I was going to say, I didn't expect to sense Jesus there, but I was wrong.
Hmm.
When we went to places where he had been, which I didn't go to a lot of them. Jack was working and I was in school. And then I was pregnant with a baby. But the places I did go, Jerusalem, I went a few times, a couple places in Galilee area. I had this growing sense of awe that he had chosen to walk in that place and had chosen to be a human being in that place. Yeah. And I just didn't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bit of a, I don't know if it was a cynical, intellectual, bad attitude or what, but I just,
yeah,
more and more.
More affected. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you guys were there for, you said, 2 years, 2.5 years?
2.5 years.
What brought you back? Was it just end of Jack's contract or?
Yes.
End of Jack's contract. And you guys landed back in Seattle area mm-hmm. at that point.
And he went back to Boeing.
Okay. Yeah. He's been at Boeing a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was at Boeing when I met him.
Yeah.
And then he left to mm-hmm. do this. And when he came back, he actually was on contract at Boeing for a while until they had room to hire him. They mm-hmm. hired him back. Yeah. And then, you know, we had kids pretty close together, so every 2 years.
Mm-hmm. You guys have four kids, right?
We have four kids yeah. And they were all high-risk pregnancies, actually. Mm. It was actually really not okay. And this is not the place to tell those stories. In fact, I don't tell women of birthing age my stories.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. you don't need to know.
Yeah, but you guys have been planted in this area ever since.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it's a lot to fly over because it's been, you know, decades at this point that you guys have been here. But at the risk of chasing too many rabbits or squirrels or whatever you want to call it, what have you seen the Lord do? If you were to look back and distill it into a few things in the time that you guys have gotten back from Israel and have been here and planted, what have you seen the Lord do? What have been a few things that you've been able to either sense as they're happening or look back and say, like, man, the Lord was just so close to us and guiding us at that point?
That is hard to answer.
Wide open, yeah.
Well, life can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's really good times and there's really hard times. And
I've heard from some people that there are hard times. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. State the obvious. Yeah. Oh gosh.
If that's too paralyzing a question, then we can.
It's just so broad.
Mm-hmm.
Every year,
mm-hmm.
the Lord has shown his faithfulness to me. He's mm-hmm. never let me down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's brought great good out of everything, the difficult and the wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't regret any day that I have spent being his. And that's my hope for forever. Something I would say about, I was thinking about this in the last few days, suffering is that there's a certain amount of comfort and grace that you can get from the Lord when you're suffering. But at some point, it's like there's just not much more he can do for you if it's just about me and what I need.
Mm.
It's just very limiting because I'm just small. I'm a very limited realm. But caring for others and sharing the love of Christ with others in whatever way that happens is tapping into the unlimited presence of God. So for me, if I'm suffering, mm-hmm. I may seek him for a time, but I've learned that investing in caring for others, ministering to others however I can, you know, just giving is like untold riches. It's so, there's no other way to live as a Christian. You know, Jesus said, I'm the vine and you are the branches. And the branch abides in the vine. The branch gets nourishment from the vine. And if the branch just holds on to that nourishment, it just mm-hmm. becomes a dead end. Maybe it gets a few more leaves. But if you're bearing fruit, then you can continue to draw
mm-hmm.
nourishment from the vine. It's kind of like that. So no matter what I go through, it's like I'm less and less afraid of the suffering and the hardships. And every day I just see the kindness and the blessing and the grace of the Lord. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. What have I seen him do? We've seen him do so many things. And I didn't know how long I was going to live, partly because of my story of how I got saved,
mm-hmm.
partly because I clinically died when Katie was born. I was 25. And just the sense of the shortness of life. I mean, mm-hmm. life is short.
Yeah, it is.
And I didn't want to waste any time.
Mm.
I wanted to give as much and invest as much in my love for Christ as I could. So any opportunity I had, I pursued, at least to the best of my understanding. In fact, I had to, there were a lot of things, and I was always involved in a lot of things, but there were a lot that it took me time to learn to say no to people. Because the Lord was saying a lot of this is, you know, you're just trying to please people. That's not the best idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you love people, it's really hard to separate what is loving from what is trying to please them and not necessarily pleasing to God. Mm-hmm. That just takes time to learn. So he taught me how to say no. And when I finally got to where I know how to say no, then he started teaching me to say yes. And by then I'm like, no, I don't really want to, you know.
Yeah.
How about I just pass on this one? But then I realized, no, this is what I've asked for. This is what I want. So anyway, again, I feel like it's hard. I don't know if I answered you.
You're just fine. It was a super broad question. So yeah. I apologize for that. But I love what you said about typically when we think about, bearing fruit, we think of that being an overflow of something that we might call materially good. I love how you tied that to suffering. That's really powerful.
Thank you.
How, I think, again, especially in, maybe it's just our American context, we think of blessing in a only as like, okay, here's a material good for me, not...
In comfort.
Yeah, and in comfort,
the
exactly.
Lack of suffering.
We think suffering bad. Suffering is the opposite of blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily true. And I love that you've because, knowing... some of the parts of your story that you're not sharing, there has been significant suffering in your life, and you've shared some of that. So your unwillingness to waste that is powerful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, suffering is not a punishment. Mm-mm. That is a common mindset. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just our country or if it's elsewhere.
No, it's been going on since Job.
Good point. Good point. I've read that. But it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we're afraid of suffering, so often we are afraid of something that we're not currently exposed to. And we can't drum up the grace of God for that. It mm-hmm. just, why would he give us something we don't need?
Yeah.
And yet the suffering that is actually a part of our lives, even if we live in an affluent place and we have comfortable homes and more possessions than anybody in their right mind could want, suffering comes. And as you're in it, it's not like, oh no, I'm afraid that this is me. There's all kinds of emotions, but the kind of fear you have of suffering that's not in your life is a very different thing. It's an imaginary psychological thing, right? And it's just not worth wasting any time over. I don't have the strength to face anything that is actually not in my life right now.
Oh, that's a great sentence. I think about that for just
that's
a minute.
That's a great tagline, actually. Yeah, it is.
I'm going to try to remember that. I don't even know what I said.
Well, at least it's recorded. You know, you can go back and listen to it a few times.
Yeah.
Suzanne, seriously, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your life with us here at Imprint Church. Is there anything else that you, you want to say just to someone who might be listening, whether that's a word of encouragement or exhortation or whatever?
Well, one note that I had here, in John 10:10, Jesus said, I came so that they may have life and have it in abundance. Mm-hmm. I've learned that we can function as whole people, even if we're still broken, mm-hmm. even if we're still wounded, mm-hmm. even if we're imperfect or weak or troubled by sin or patterns of, you know, just disobedience, regardless of what all of our flaws are and our mess. The abundant life is something that we have now because of Jesus. And simply trusting in that makes it easier to follow the leading of the Holy Spirit, if that makes sense. He's able to give us blessing and grace so that we can function as whole people. We don't have to give in to whatever our fears or, I don't know, old memories or triggers. We don't have to be afflicted by that. Well, that may not be the right. It is the right thing to say, because the Lord works on us, and there's times when those things come up and we have to look at them and we have to feel them and we have to pray
talk to
about
him about them.
And
yeah.
talk to him and work on them, and maybe, you know, counseling or counsel with a friend or a pastor. And the rest of the time, we have the Spirit of God and we have the blessing of the Lord that we can live as free people who walk by the Spirit and who reflect the heart of God, and have an abundant life. And it's not a lie.
Yeah.
What do you mean by it's not a lie?
It's not a lie. It's not superficial. There's times when...
It's not just like painting silver clouds around all your rain clouds, or silver linings around all your rain clouds.
Yes.
And
right.
being that kind of overly optimistic, hyper-religious.
It's right. not an opiate.
Yeah,
it's not a way
naivety.
Of...
Naivety.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like if I say, you know, I believe it or not, there have been times when I've wrestled over what to answer when people say, how are you?
Yeah.
Because I want to be honest, but I don't want to dump on them. So what do you answer? So there have been times when I would think, no, I feel like the right thing to do is say, you know, I'm having a hard time, but I'm hanging in there. And that's true. And there's times when I think, no, I should say, I'm doing well, which is also true. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a lie.
I see. Yeah.
So the truth of who I am in Christ is deeper than anything else.
Yeah, two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
I am struggling. It is a hard day. I am experiencing suffering for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And also I am loved and cared for.
And secure.
And mm-hmm. secure in not only God's love, but in his family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Or to say I'm really, really concerned and grieved about this situation and longing to see God work in this situation, but I am also absolutely trusting in him, and I know that he's faithful.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are all true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. That's a great thing to leave us on. Suzanne, seriously, thanks for sharing your story. I know there's more, and you glossed over so much, but I also know that you'll share with someone in the right situation. So if you don't know Suzanne, you haven't spent time talking with her, you should change that. She will pray for you and, again, shower you with scripture in ways that are incredibly encouraging and only overwhelming in the best possible way, I'll say from experience. So, yeah, we will we'll be back next week probably with some more stories of God's faithfulness to his people. Until then, yeah, we'll see you later.
Adios.
Bye.
Until then, we will see you later doesn't actually Late make clothes. Any sense.
No, it does not, but it makes grammatical, or what do they call it? Not the syntax, but the...
yeah, I know what you're talking about, but yeah. How about instead of saying that, I'll say, but we will see you later. Bye. Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.